This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
6:13 on his Thursday morning, August 14th, as we head into the belly of the beast of hurricane season. But it's all quiet for the next 7 to 10 days. That's all we can do, 7 to 10 days at a time, otherwise hot and humid. But again, if the tropics are quiet, I don't think any of us have anything to complain about. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. That's not something you guys worry about, is it, Andy? Hurricane season, really?
Not too much. Usually just in mid-late September, we'll get the remnants of them that come up the coast, and we get 3 inches of rain. But generally, the wind's largely gone by the time they get up this way.
So what do you worry? Because here in New Orleans, you know, we worry about, because we're under sea level, we worry about heavy rains, and we also worry about hurricane season every year after Katrina. In New Hampshire, what do you worry about weather-wise?
Tourists from Massachusetts. other than that, ice storms. Ice storms are the bad thing around here.
Oh, my. Tourists from Massachusetts. Well, that just said a whole lot, didn't it? Let's talk about this story about a record number of lawmakers aren't planning to run for re-election. What's going on here? And is it Republicans that are not running for re-election? Democrats evenly split? What?
Well, I think what you're seeing, the record number means it's the record number for this point in time in a cycle. Okay. And I think what's going on there is that the number of people that typically resign has been relatively stable over the last 20, 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. somewhere in the 10 to 15% of the Congress, so 40 to 50 people. I think what you're seeing now is people deciding to leave earlier. Giving their parties a chance to recruit people and start fundraising for them, or they see that they've got a strong challenger in a primary and they're just saying, heck with it. So I think that we should not be overly concerned about the numbers that are leaving now, because it's in line with what's happened before. And you're seeing it from both Republicans and Democrats are leaving. The biggest reason people leave is you can see the general reasons. They're old. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of elderly folks in our Congress. The amount of time they have to spend raising money, which is no fun. They spend 2 to 3 days a week just sitting raising money. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest thing is they think they're going to lose. with divisions in both parties, both kind of like the Trump versus non-Trump Republicans, and then the more progressive versus more traditional Democrats, there's a lot of reason to say, you know, I have to worry about a primary and a general election, so I'm just going to get out now. So I think those are the big reasons that you're seeing this happen right now. The other reason is that people are seeking higher office. So they want to, you see a lot of people running for governor, running for senator. They're going to announce they're leaving earlier than before, again, because it costs so much to run for those seats. So they want to spend more time focusing on those seats and fundraising for them.
I always wondered what was bigger, senator or governor?
I'd say, you know, from a practical position, the governor is a much better position to have because you're actually getting to manage something, you run something. So that attracts those people that want to see accomplishments in the sense of actually delivering on services, changing the way the state business is, attracting business to the state, et cetera. My view with the Senate is they just are the ones who like to talk more. They get a lot of adulation in Washington in the inside circles there, but they really only have a staff of, you know, maybe 20 or 30 people, and they spend their time raising money and talking rather than actually administering something. So that's why you see the a number of governors who are encouraged to run for the Senate, but they'll look at that and say, Jesus, why do I want to do that kind of crap? I can stay here in my state and actually do something rather than just talk.
But I would make an argument if looking at it from the other side of it. Well, wait, I got 6 years in office. I got the perks. I got a guaranteed paycheck. Chances are I'm going to be reelected because senators, for the most part, often do get reelected, do they not?
They do. You sound like you live close to Washington there.
No, I'm just looking. I'm just looking for a steady paycheck. That's all. That's what I'm looking for. And you know what, Andy? I am so jaded. I am so cynical about politics. I'd like to think that people get into it. And I know a guy, a state senator. I was visiting with him yesterday that I tell him I think he's one of the good ones, that he's always does the right thing and he's trying to do the right thing for the right people and for the right purposes. Sometimes as part, and I told him this too, I said, sometimes as part of the process, I know you have to kind of swallow hard and go along, but that's in order to do the greater good. I get all of that. And then my final words to him were, don't F it up.
Well, they're all under a lot of pressure by the parties and just by, you know, personal desires to move up in life to seek higher office. And once you're in those higher offices, you've got staff that you have to make sure can keep their jobs. You've got consultants that are telling you to run again. You're constantly running for money. You got the party putting pressure on you to say, you know, keep running and you'll move up a leg or two in the pecking order in the House or the Senate. So there are a lot of pressures for you to stay in office. And once you get in that grind, that's kind of what you do. There are people that actually enjoy the political combat more than they do the legislating. And I think that's the problem. Those are the ones that we see see a lot of. I think it was Morris Fiorina, an old political scientist, used to talk about workhorses versus show horses in Congress. The workhorses are the guys you're talking about. They tend to work on legislation for a long time. They become specialists in different areas. And the show horses are the ones that go on TV and talk a lot.
I've been doing this job for a long time, and years ago, I was running a tease. You know, we do teases where coming up tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. And I got a call at my home at about 7 o'clock at night from David Vitter, who was senator at the time, saying, are you really doing this, blah, 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 pleading his case. And I still don't know how he got my cell phone number.
They have people.
Really, I'm serious. That to this day, I can remember exactly where I was, where it's like, this Senator David Vitter. Okay. And I thought it was a robocall at first, but no, it was him griping about the tease that I was running. Are you really doing this and this, that, and the other thing? It's like, I didn't ask, but I should have asked. How'd you get this number? I'm just curious. All right, Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. We'll pick it up here. We come back about President Trump. And I see some senators that might be thinking about running for governor and how that could affect him. Tommy Tuberville, Marsha Blackburn. And, well, as a Democrat as well, Michael Bennett. 620 traffic now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Thursday morning, August 14th. Talking with our friend Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, about senators, primarily, I guess, the representatives that are not running. We have a story running. Dave Cone will tell you more about locally about Democrats not really having much of a bench or many people to put up for office. Nationally, is that the case, Andy? Is one party stronger than the other when it comes to candidates?
Well, I think in 2026, it's going to be a better year for Democrats because historically, the president's party loses seats in midterm elections. So usually the overall dynamics means that some of those people that were considering running have been waiting for one of these midterm elections. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's going to vary on a state-by-state basis, certainly, because strong Republican states, it's going to be difficult for the Democrats to recruit a strong candidate and vice versa in strong Democratic states. But it's usually that overall cycle of midterm elections favoring the party that's not in the White House that I think is driving a lot of the lack of depth on the Republican bench. And another reason why you've seen a lot of Republicans deciding that this is the time to spend more time with their family.
So when it comes to what do most of these people do when they leave? Become lobbyists? I know that's what David Vitter did. I think he's working for lobbying for Russia. I thought he was doing that the last time I checked.
A lot of them go into that. Several people try to go to higher office, but if the ones who are resigning, if they're very old, like state senator or our senator here, Jean Shaheen, she's probably just going to retire. But you get a lot of people, though, if they've been in the Senate, particularly, who go into lobbying, because once you've been in the Senate for even a day, Senate rules allow you to go onto the floor of the Senate. And that means you can put your arm around somebody and say, hey, listen, old buddy, why don't you vote this way on this bill? And that's something that lobbying groups and lobbying law firms down in D.C. really desire, those people who can get right onto the floor of the Senate and speak directly to senators.
What about the people I mentioned before, Tuberville and Blackburn? Would that have any effect on President Trump's agenda, or is he going to be actively involved? How long are his coattails, fingers, however you want to say it, when it comes to the elections?
I don't think that's going to matter too much because both Alabama and Tennessee are pretty solidly Republican states. It's likely that Republicans will be replacing them in those seats. So I don't think that's going to make much difference in the overall look. I think that some of the places that I'd be paying more attention to would be the places where the senator is out of step with the state. And I just look across the border in Maine here, Susan Collins is out of step with both the MAGA wing of the Republican Party in Maine, but she's the state of Maine is becoming more and more Democratic over time as well. So she's the kind of person that I think is most likely to resign and make it hard for the Republicans to pick up that seat. I don't think if Susan Collins doesn't run, I think that we pretty much marked that seat down as a Democratic seat next fall.
And as it is, it's almost like independent now, right? I mean, she's a Republican, but for the most part, doesn't toe the party line, accurate or not?
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. And that's what, our representatives are supposed to do. They're supposed to represent what their state looks like rather than what the president or the party down in D.C. want them to do. And their reelection is determined on their ability to convince their state, the voters in their state, that they're doing what the state wants rather than what the people in Washington want. But as I mentioned, though, those divisions within the party are making that difficult. If anybody seems to stray from the party orthodoxy, either Republican or Democratic Party, then there's the threat of them being challenged in a primary, which nobody really wants to do. Parties don't even want to do it, but that's the way they kind of keep them under rein to vote the way the party wants them to vote.
Thank you, Andy.
And I don't know what we could do about that.
Appreciate it. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Let me clean this up quickly. David Vitter is a partner of Mercury in Washington, D.C., and leads the development of Mercury's Gulf South operations. He helps clients with strategic government relations. He's a partner of Mercury. I just said that, didn't I? And I thought at one point he was lobbying for the Russians. I don't want to slander anybody or anything like that, but that's currently what David Vitter's doing. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. Well, top of the morning to ya. And might I say top of the morning and welcome back to Michael Strain, Mrs. Strain's son, Commissioner of the Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How are you doing today, Michael?
Man, I am doing excellent. I've actually get to drink some coffee. You know, we had a lot of tea across the pond.
Oh, yeah.
You know, early mornings, lots of tea and a little bit of Blarney, but I tell you, it was a very, very, very good trade mission. It's the second time I've been in a number of months. We were there for about 6 days, and we went across the United Kingdom, you know, from Dublin to Belfast to Patrick, down to Cork, and across Armagh Kildare, into Dublin, and then into London. And so we worked.
Dublin.
Into Dublin, Ireland. That's exactly right. And on my way, actually, to Belfast from Dublin, the driver showed me where the Strain family still is.
Get out.
You know, right there in County Down. He said, you go right down that road, there's a whole bunch of you.
Really?
Right down the road.
And that's where, that's where your people hail from, Mike? Ireland? The old sod?
Yep. Well, after we left Scotland, we were part of they called it the plantation, mm-hmm. after the flight of the Lords. When they left and we were moved from Scotland into Ireland, into that one particular area, you know, there in County Down by Lurgan.
What year was that you're talking
about? Where most of the family, and from there, you know, left and came across the pond in the 1700s.
Wow.
To establish here in America. So that it was very good.
Wow.
Very good.
My family got here in 58. I'm just kidding. You know what gets me about what got me about Ireland is the breakfast. I don't know if you had any of the traditional Irish breakfast, but they serve pork.
It's pretty huge.
They serve pork and beans for breakfast, which is odd.
Well, that started during the war. And that'd be World War II, pork and beans. It's still a big deal there. They're very traditional. You know, meals are very, very traditional. So we're trying to introduce them and talk to them about crawfish etouffee, you know, with Louisiana crawfish and, of course, Louisiana rice. One of the things, and, I traveled this time. This was on, behalf of the Foreign Ag Service. Mm-hmm. There were six of the six commissioners. And we traveled with the embassy staff. Jennifer Gruber and William Cernum from the British Embassy, and also from Grian Rowan with the Embassy of Ireland. And it's all meetings of high-level officials. We had a very good meeting with the United States ambassador there at the embassy in London. We met with their top agricultural officials. We met with the head, the Christine Middlemiss, Dr. Middlemiss, the UK chief veterinary officer. They have a facility there where they are developing vaccines in concert with a company called Boehringer Ingelheim, which is one of the largest vaccine companies in the world, on the emerging diseases. And they're actually putting those vaccines out into the world. And we're talking about African swine fever, foot and mouth disease, blue tongue, avian influenza. So we were there at that facility. Hmm. We met with their chief plant officers. And of course, all of their different, in each individual country, we met with the people responsible for importing and exporting food. So it was a trade mission based on facilitating and increasing trade, working together. The British Kingdom, the United Kingdom now is importing 42% of their food.
Wow.
That is a big deal. Yeah. Their agriculture and their economy is struggling more than ours is. And it's a very complicated thing. So Northern Ireland gets all of their food, all of their groceries are shipped over from Britain. The Northern Ireland and Britain use the same currency, the pound. Ireland uses the euro, and it's aligned, it's aligned with Europe, even though it's just a line in the sand between the two countries. Mm-hmm. And it is a complicated food system, but they are working hard. The farms are small. You don't see a lot of big equipment like we have here in the United States, but they are really struggling now to continue to feed themselves. They export, believe it or not, the dairy is the most profitable. We're here in the United States, it's one of our least profitable. But what we did find out is every acre of land and agricultural production is supplemented financially by the government, and that you have to farm it according to what the government tells you. And the better you do, the more points you get, the more points you get, the more money you get. And so now you have non-farmers dictating farming policy, and it just doesn't work out so well.
No, it doesn't seem like it would.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So we're over there for exchange of ideas, but also to build the relationships so we can sell them some products. They need rice. They really need to buy some U.S. catfish, and it is catfish month, but also our seafood, you know, our shrimp, our crawfish, our, you know, and all of our different products, our sugar. So we're working to facilitate that. I've been asked to return by the British government for a trade mission on timber, you know, as we have 18.6 million acres. So the big timber states, Louisiana, Arkansas, Connecticut, that export timber, we'll be headed to Scotland working with Drax on behalf of the, you know, asked by the British government, and to help facilitate and grow that, because, you know, we need to export our balance of trade. We need to export. And these countries depend on American food products. And by God, we're ready. We will sell them something. You know, we'll take their pounds and their euros. And but again, there's a great need that is developing because in their agriculture system, they need a lot of help over there.
Mike, one thing that I did notice is the sheep, they were either sprayed, they had a little dot of blue or pink on them to determine whether they're boys or girls. And I'm just wondering, is that a uniquely Irish thing, or do the sheep farmers here do that?
Yeah, we mark them here.
Do you? Okay.
So they're, you know, yeah, well, they mark the sheep, you know, whether or not they have been, you know, dewormed, or whether or not they've been vaccinated, or whether or not they're going to keep them or they're going to go. And so you see a lot of sheep there. They grow grass there very well. Mm-hmm. Most days, especially in Northern Ireland, along the North Sea, the lows were 40 and the high was 50.
Lucky you.
And it's always raining. So they got magnificent, beautiful grass. Everything is grass-based. Their beef is very different. They eat a lot of sheep because, look, sheep eat grass each, and they can go up on the side of those. They call them hills.
Yeah.
My God, they're mountains. And yeah, they crawl up there and they eat that grass. So they eat a lot of mutton, and that is a big deal. Wool is a big deal. Mutton's a big deal. You know, we went to farms that have been in existence since at least 400 A.D.
And what?
So you think about that. Oh, yeah. And the fences are stone, right?
Right. So and the hedgerows, right?
And the hedgerows. Yeah. And they've got, they call them fairy forts, and that's where they were wooden fortresses that predate stone forts, because you think of, like, especially in Ireland, it was like the Wild West. You had to be inside the fort at night. If not, you know, they would come and steal everything that you had, and had the forts eyesight to eyesight. So you never think about, you know, the days there that were, again, like the Wild West, where you had to be locked up in the fort at night, but that was the case, and they've left them there. So it's an ancient country with a lot of history, but again, supported the most fertile land in the United Kingdom is in Ireland, and you'll find that around the old castles and the old monasteries.
It's a beautiful country. I would advise everybody to visit. Mike, real quick before we run out of time, tell me about sharing a road with farm vehicles, because I'm getting some text about this.
We are in the height of harvest. We're harvested. You know, we got rice being harvested, corn being harvested. We've got cane being planted. Please give them some space. You know, they've got these trucks on the road, and, you know, and they're loaded. And, of course, you know, those farmers, they've got to get the crops, you know, in the ground, got to get the seed to the ground. So please give them some time. And whatever you do, please don't try to outrun the train. Every year people are trying to outrun the train on the tracks and those rural crossings. So a little bit of patience, a little bit of time, and we'll get the crops in the ground and get the everything harvested and be safe. And remember, that great big old tractor, that's a big machine. Please give them a little space. All be courteous and working together.
Mike, what happened with Elmer Chocolate?
Yes, isn't that something? I'm right. They got sold to a Florida firm. But, of course, well, you know, hopefully they're going to stay, and Elmer's is not going to leave. They have a magnificent facility. I don't know if you've ever been, but it is as clean as, you know, as if you would think of just the cleanest you can be.
Right, but let me jump in real quick, Mike.
Elmer's has got to be Louisiana.
With the private equity companies are buying up a lot of local companies, right?
Yes, they are. That's Wall Street. They're buying a lot of land, too, and a lot of farms.
And they're still trying to run it under the family name, but it's not the family name. It's the private equity firm that's running the company. Accurate?
I know. Well, you know, come Easter time, I'm going to have to do a lot of sampling. Right? Oh, well, I have my heavenly hash.
Somebody's got to do it, Mike. Somebody's got to do it. Thank you. Welcome back. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Y'all, I'm telling you, if you go visit one European country, go to Ireland. You will not be disappointed. 655. Pardon me. Traffic, WWL. 7:16 now on this Thursday morning, August 14th, as we head into the belly of the beast of hurricane season. Don't forget the Saints taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. We got all the action for you here. It's not only a preseason game, it'd be a rehearsal for the fans, really, because it's a noon kickoff Sunday in the Dome. Our coverage starts at 10 o'clock with First Take. No, 8 o'clock, rather, I think, with Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak. And then at 10 o'clock, you can join Bobby Hebert for the countdown to kickoff inside the Dome, Loach Level, Gate B Atrium. That's presented by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. Then at noon, y'all, I'm telling you, you're missing it if you don't turn down the sound on TV and sync up with Deuce and Hoss. You go find out more about the Saints than you would from TV. And then you can join Bobby Hebert for the point after. 10 hours wall-to-wall black and gold football, Saints-Jaguars, Sunday on WWL and free Odyssey app. Xavier Thompson joins us now, assistant professor at the LSU School of Kinesiology. He's a leading expert in sports medicine. How you doing, Doc?
Good. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. Trevor Penning out with a turf toe, and boy, of all the injuries that, to me, are minimized by the name, turf toe is one of them. Thoughts?
Yeah. A very deceptive name. And I think a lot of times we think, oh, you know, it's a toe. It can't be too bad.
It's like, come on, bro. What are you talking about? Really, turf toe. What do you mean? Come on. Really? But it's more
exactly,
than that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It is. So turf toe is tough because it's a sprain of that big toe. And you don't realize it when it's not hurt, but you put so much weight through that just walking that anything more than that is so difficult. And so turf toe is one of those injuries that sounds really easy to take care of, but can really sideline us for a good amount of time.
And I think part of it is if you're an accountant and you have turf toe, well, maybe you can get by. But when you're performing at the highest level, that's where it really matters, right?
Exactly. So once you sprain that joint, you can't push off as well. So you might be able to, like you said, if you're an accountant, kind of walk it off, but you're not going to be able to push off to your full capability. So even if, you know, you can handle the pain, you're just not going to be able to perform that same way until things start to get better and you improve that strength, that flexibility, and the ligaments actually heal.
I kind of got ahead of myself. What exactly is turf toe?
Great question. So turf toe is a sprain of the big toe joint. And what usually happens when your foot's kind of pointed down, like you're pressing on the gas, but the toe itself is pushed upwards, like it's going towards your face. And it's called turf toe because when we first started seeing these, it was really associated with the change to the old school AstroTurfs.
And is it because of turf, or are people as likely to get it on real grass?
It's not necessarily because of turf. I will say it's definitely more common on turf. So it's interesting because, you know, turf lets athletes move faster and generate more force, which can really make for these really exciting games. You know, you're kind of flying out there. But, you know, more force means that some of that increased stress has to go somewhere. And I also say, you know, the old turfs, because believe it or not, turf has been around since the 60s. So there's obviously been a lot of changes in its design since then. And it's really hard to talk about turf in general because there's just so much variability based on, you know, even 10 years ago, the technology has gone into such a different place. But we're really, funny enough, we're trying to imitate grass. It's just easier to take care of at times and easier to grow in places that grass doesn't grow.
If you go to YouTube, you can find some old NFL films video, and one of them, one segment is about the advent of AstroTurf and how bad it was when it first started. It was like carpet on rock, right? Pretty much carpet on concrete, and then they got made it a little bit better. But let me ask you this. You do this for your life's work. If you, in an ideal world, if you had your way, do you think it would be safer for players to always play on a natural surface, on grass?
You know, it's funny because I've gone back and forth on this so many times. And, you know, I've seen people say grass is safer. You're always going to have some injuries. You know, I've seen someone blow out two patellar tendons on grass. I think in a perfect world, you know, it's important that whether it's grass or turf, that it's actually maintained. And I think that gets overlooked. You know, if you have a bunch of patchy grass, I think they rolled out some grass for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and the grass itself was fine. But because of how they rolled it out, you saw a lot of guys slipping. So it's really about the field maintenance itself. And I will also admit I'm not a turf scientist, so I can't speak about, you know, turf that they're developing. In 2025, it might be, you know, the greatest thing ever, but it really is hard to say, hey, that's going to be better than the natural surface. And again, the research is mixed. You have a lot that says, hey, you're going to have more foot and ankle injuries on turf than on grass. You're going to have more hip and knee injuries potentially. But you also have a few studies that say, well, we're actually seeing a little less. So it really also is going to depend on your level of play and really how well it's maintained. You know?
Let me take a break.
NFL is not what you're going
to
see.
All right, let me take a break. I know you can't speak specifically to Trevor Penning because you've not looked at him. We're just talking about turf toe in general. Y'all got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Don't ever text and drive. 722 Traffic, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Xavier Thompson, assistant professor at the LSU School of Kinesiology, a leading expert in sports medicine. Trevor Penning's going to miss some time with turf toe. Again, Dr. Thompson has not looked at Trevor Penning. We're just talking, generally speaking, about turf toe. This is a good question. Somebody texted in and said, in all the years of playing and doing exercises, can you strengthen the toe or avoid do anything to make turf toe less likely?
Yeah, a lot that can help there is really footwear related. I mean, you can try to strengthen the feet, the toes, the ligaments, you know, things like yoga. Mm. Honestly, just playing the sport. But if for whatever reason you just get too much load one time, you're likely to see it. But we really are seeing it less and less, and I think that's a credit to how much training has improved and footwear has improved over the years.
There are three types of turf toe, right?
Yes. And so usually if you're not going surgical, you know, you are looking at grade one or grade two, which the recovery time is usually a little better. And those, you know, kind of meld together. But you're usually looking at maybe 4 to 8 weeks to get back.
Mm-hmm.
More rarely, if you're seeing a grade three, you're going to see more damage to the ligaments and the, you know, the plantar fascia on the bottom of the foot.
Mm-mm.
You'll see surgery in those cases, and that usually takes a lot longer. But if you're not having surgery, usually you have a pretty good outcome.
Don't say plantar fascia. I don't even want to hear those words.
you and me both.
Yeah, I'm telling you. When it comes to the turf at Tiger Stadium, I've been down on the field. I'm sure you have as well. What kind of grass is that? Do you have any idea?
I am not sure. You know, I know it's turf, but I'm not well-versed enough to say exactly what kind.
I'd love to have it on my lawn, I'll tell you that. You? It's Bermuda, Tim tells
me.
Oh,
me and me both.
I'm telling you, it's beautiful. You could putt on that. Thank you, Doc. I appreciate the time and the information. Real quick, if you had to say which was more problematic, would it be a hamstring or turf toe?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today. And live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
I guess it depends on the severity.
Right? I'd say usually hamstring.
Yeah.
We usually see a lot more recurrence with those.
I guess a lot bigger area too, right, with the hamstring effects?
Yeah, a lot bigger area, and just, you know, it's hard to limit the hamstring when you're trying to go full speed.
Yeah, people think the hamstring is just the back of the leg, but it's not.
No, and it's actually three muscles, too. So that, you know, that makes it a little more complicated.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time, as always. Really, Doc, thank you. Dr. Xavier Thompson, assistant professor at LSU School of Kinesiology, a leading expert in sports medicine. We'll take a break, come back, talk about the National World War II Museum, what they got going on. Right now, it's time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. 7:46, 14 till 8, August 14th. Back on August 6th, we talked about the bombing of Hiroshima. August 9th, we talked about the atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki. That led to the Japanese surrender that happened 80 years ago today. And joining us now is John Curatola, the Samuel Zamurray Stone Senior Historian at the National World War II Museum, to talk about what they're doing there to commemorate that. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, sir, and yourself?
I am well. Thank you so much. It seems like... We remember when the days the war started, although I don't think people really are aware of what date the war started or was declared on Germany. But we don't really recognize the VJ Day or the anniversary of this. Take me through it, John. I'm stumbling, rumbling, fumbling here. You're the historian. You take care of it, please.
Yeah, not a problem, my friend. Yeah, like, of course, the beginning of the war depends on where you live. If you're in Manchuria, it's 1931. If you're China, 1937. And if you're in Europe, it's 1939. If you're an American, it's 1941. Mm-hmm. So you have a multiple of choices out there. And for the end of the war, of course, you have VE Day, which is in May of 1945. And then VJ Day officially is September 2nd of 1945. However, the announcement of the Japanese capitulation is on August 14th. And so that's kind of what we're looking at today, is this announcement that the war will indeed be over.
So what happened between August 14th and September 2nd? What was it like in the South Pacific and other theaters of war with the Japanese?
Yeah, it's a tense period, and here's why. You've agreed to a ceasefire between the Japanese Empire and the Allies, and there's a lot of trepidation. Is this really going to happen? You know, are the Japanese really going to surrender, or is this some kind of a trick? Mm-hmm. And there actually are a number of combat actions that occur between the 14th and the 2nd, to include the shooting at a number of American aircraft that are on reconnaissance flights over the home islands.
And it's 1945, so it's not as though people could – the communication is not as it was today.
Correct. You know, and what you're getting at best in terms of mass communication are radio announcements. And that, quite frankly, that is how Emperor Hirohito will address the Japanese people through his announcement to them. And many of them don't actually believe what they're hearing. Many of them are actually confused as to what the emperor is telling them. And so you see a lot of confusion on the Japanese side of the equation because they've never experienced anything like this.
Is there a true end date, as a historian, John, where every Japanese soldier was aware that the war was over?
Yeah, of course, September 2nd is the official date. But as we know, there are a number of Japanese soldiers who are holdouts in Guam, Saipan, the Philippines, who don't believe the war is over, and they will stay hidden in the jungles of these islands literally for years.
Sniping?
With one, I think one comes out in the 1970s, if that late.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Sniping until they were out of ammunition or not, or just hiding?
Well, just existing because they hadn't gotten word or they couldn't believe the fact that Japan had surrendered, either one of the two. And many of them are steadfast in their devotion to the emperor and will not surrender until they actually bring their commanding officers to the island to tell them to stand down.
The last Japanese soldier to formally surrender after World War II was Hiro Onoda. He continued fighting on Lubang Island in the Philippines for nearly 29 years after the war's end in 1945. He finally surrendered on March 9th, 1974. That's almost impossible to believe, but it is true. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back talking about, although VJ Day is a celebration and the surrender was a big day of celebration, it was bittersweet. We'll explain why when we come back. We're talking to John Curatola, Samuel Zamore Stone, senior historian at the National World War II Museum, considered by a lot of people as one of the top museums in the world, certainly in the United States and absolutely in the city. And if you've not been to the National World War II Museum, I say every American owes it to the country to visit the National World War II Museum once and Washington, D.C. once, of course, with the National World War II Museum. There's not a whole lot of travel involved in that. 752 traffic, WWL. S-758, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to John Curatola, Samuel Zamore Stone, senior historian at the National World War II Museum. It was a big day, and we remember the picture of, you know, the woman kissing the sailor in Times Square, but it was bittersweet because over 400,000 American servicemen were killed. That's like four Tiger Stadiums full of people, and you can imagine the impact that had on families, 65 million people worldwide. John, what's going on tonight to commemorate the surrender of Japan?
Yeah, we're here at the museum having the 80th anniversary to commemorate the event. And it starts at 6 o'clock, and we'll have some welcoming remarks from our CEO, Stephen Watson. And I'll give a very short lecture on the significance of the war and how it's remembered here at the museum. And then the key feature will be interviews with three World War II veterans and stakeholders to talk about their experiences, not only during the war, but then how they felt on this day 80 years ago and their experiences.
Man, don't miss that. There aren't a lot of World War II veterans left. Emily Drake was the stenographer of the Women's Army Corps. Dr. Lewis Harnett, a volunteer ambulance driver. And Sanford Jones, a U.S. Army Air Force gunner on B-24 Liberators in the European theater. Sounds awesome. Thank you, John. I appreciate your time, and thank you for all the work y'all do there.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. Go to national www.2museum.org to find out more. It is important to take your medications on time and as prescribed. That's a lot easier said than done. Dr. Brent Wallace joins us now, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, Dr. B, to share tips for keeping up with your medication routine. How you doing, Doc?
Hey, Tommy. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am awesome. Tell me what it means to take medication as prescribed.
Yeah, sure. So just like it sounds, it really just means taking the medicine that your doctor gave you exactly how they tell you to take it and how it's written on the bottle. And we actually call that medication adherence, and it's really, really critical to taking care of your diseases.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than going to the doctor and he asks you and you tell him, because I've been there, oh, I was supposed to take it twice a day? I didn't know, right? Tell me why it's important to take your medication correctly.
Yeah, I mean, it's really critical to treating all of those illnesses and chronic diseases you have. And you know, really crazy, but about 1 in 5 new prescriptions that are written by a provider are never even filled by patients. And a lot of those new prescriptions that are filled are taken incorrectly. And that can, like I said, have really severe consequences. It can even cause something like hospitalization or a decline in your overall health and make those long-term health conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure even worse.
And to be clear, this is not something that just applies to elderly people. This is people of all age groups, right?
Yeah, exactly. Across the board, this is critical.
Give me some examples of taking medication incorrectly. I've already given you one, my own personal experience.
Yeah, we hear all kinds of things, but, you know, for an example, like you were saying, if a doctor says take one pill twice a day, that's a very common prescription that we may write. Usually we'll put on the bottle once in the morning and once at night, just to be clear. But some people will say, well, I'm just going to take one pill. I don't really think I need two daily. You know, they may take both of those pills in the morning because maybe they're worried that they're not going to take the second one at night. Some people will just skip their medications altogether. They may forget about it or they may feel like they don't need it. And then a lot of people will sometimes just stop their medications and not speak to their doctor about it. And that's something you definitely shouldn't do.
One thing I love is going to the pharmacy and it says take one pill twice a day. And I ask them, how can I take the same pill twice? And then security,
two different pills.
Security usually escorts me out. Let's talk about some reasons why people don't take medication as prescribed. If people are out there listening and they're thinking, I feel fine, I don't need to take any medication.
Yeah, this is very common. We hear this all the time. But, you know, what I always tell people is maybe the reason you're feeling fine is because you are taking your medication. That's what it's intended to do. And it probably means that the medication is working. So you need to continue it to have that benefit.
Been there, done that. I don't need this. Then it comes back. It's like, well, yeah, it went away because that's why you're taking the medicine, dummy. I don't take any and somebody's out there thinking, I don't take my medication because of the side effects.
Yeah, and side effects are very real, and they can sometimes be really severe. So you want to make sure you tell your doctor about any side effects you're having, because we can actually help you manage those. We can maybe adjust the dosage or change the medication to something different. You don't want to just change the medication, though, because we've got a lot of options, and we may be able to find something that'll work just as well for you, but without those side effects that you may be having.
You know, this next one, somebody... A doctor yesterday was telling me that we needed to get the word out on this about medications being too expensive to fill and some of the options that might be available.
Yeah, this is a growing problem. I mean, year over year, everything is getting more expensive, and medicines certainly are. And, you know, what you need to do in this case is definitely talk to your doctor. Sometimes physicians don't realize how much your copay or the cost of the drug is going to be. So if you get to the pharmacy and they say, I need a couple of $100, call your doctor back. There may be cheaper alternatives to that medication. In particular, if you're taking a brand name drug, there are a lot of generics available that work just as well as the brand medication. And sometimes we can actually change the regimen that you're doing or maybe simplify it. And then if you're Medicare eligible, make sure you talk to your doctor about something called Extra Help. It's a government program through Social Security that can actually help you pay your copays. And you can find information at the Social Security Administration, but your doctor probably has flyers on it as well.
All right, let me take a break. We'll open the Oquinard Jeweler Talking Text Lines, 504-260-1870. If you have a reason why you don't take your medication, text it in. I'll let Dr. B address it. Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. We're talking about the importance of taking medications on time and as prescribed, which is, of course, easier said than done. And again, calling up myself out, I've already been to the doctor where it's like, we're taking these twice a day, right? Oh, wait, I was supposed to take them twice a day? I didn't know. Well, maybe you should have read the bottle, dummy. That's what I said to myself. 820 traffic now, WWL. All right, 824, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with our friend Dr. Brent Wallace, Dr. B, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. We're talking about why do you have so much trouble adhering to your medication, or why is it so tough to take your medication on time? Why is it so important? Somebody texted in, Doc says they don't understand how to take the medication they were given.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty common, and you shouldn't be embarrassed about it. You know, these drug regimens can be confusing, so, you know, don't hesitate to talk to your doctor's office or even ask your pharmacist for tips on how you can take your medications, and especially some people are on 4, 5, 6 or even more medications, and it can be really hard to figure out when you can take all of them, so ask for written instructions. It'll kind of help you with a timeline to know when to take them and how to take them.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
One thing I would suggest is maybe getting a whiteboard. That's what I have. And if I take what I'm supposed to take, then I check it off and I know it's done for the day. And then just erase the check mark at the end of the day and start all over.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it.
Well, thank you, Doc. I came up with that myself. Somebody else texted in and said I have a hard time getting to the pharmacy.
Yeah, luckily there are options for that. Sometimes if you can't make it to the pharmacy, you know, it may be good to use mail order or even a pharmacy delivery service. A lot of local pharmacies will offer delivery. You know, they'll actually ship it or bring it straight to your house so you don't have to go to the pharmacy and wait in line. And then the other thing I always tell people, once you're on a stable dose of medicine, ask your doctor about a long-term supply, because getting something every month is a lot harder than maybe getting it every 90 days. A lot less work to do that.
Somebody texted in and said, I've been taking the same medicine for years, but I got it refilled recently and it looks different, so I'm afraid to take it.
Yeah, this happens every once in a while. And what it is there's a lot of medications made by multiple different drug companies. And it's the same exact ingredient in the pills, but they may change the size or the shape or the color of the pill. And that can be very confusing. So if you get your prescription and it looks different, just ask your pharmacist why it looks different. Make sure they confirm that you got the right thing. But that does happen every once in a while.
So I've shared my advice with the whiteboard. Maybe maybe you can share some tips for sticking to a medication routine, Doc?
Yeah, it can be tough, but there are a couple of things you can do. You know, one of the things is make sure your medications are visible. If they're out of sight, you're probably going to forget to take them. And so maybe put them on your nightstand or in the bathroom so that when you see them, you can actually, you know, grab the pill and take it. And then pill boxes are very convenient. That can actually help. They can have daily compartments. There are even some real big ones that have compartments for morning, lunch, and dinner. And you put all your doses in there, and you'll remember to take them, because if there's still pills in the box, you know you didn't take it. And then a medication calendar, kind of similar to what you were saying with a whiteboard, you can do that digitally now too. So everybody's got a phone, put little reminders. There are even apps that you can set up that'll remind you which medicine to take when. So that can be very helpful.
Yeah, I'm a whiteboard kind of guy, Doc. I'll stick with the whiteboard.
Pen and paper, I know.
Somebody texted in about habit stacking. What is that?
Yeah, so habit stacking is a really good technique, and what that is you're taking your medication should become a habit, and what you do is stack it with another habit, something that you do daily. So an example would be, you know, everybody hopefully is brushing their teeth at least once a day, hopefully twice. So if you combine your medication with when you brush your teeth, it'll reinforce it and make sure you're taking that medication. Another one a lot of people do is morning coffee. If you get up and drink a cup of coffee like I do, have your pills right next to the coffee maker, take the pill at that time. And then I had mentioned, you know, setting those cell phone or watch reminders. That can really be helpful too, because that little ringtone is something that will trigger you to say, hey, I need to take my medications.
Any final advice?
Yeah, you know, the other thing is pharmacies usually have reminder programs. I know for me, they will call me multiple times over and over, or text me or email me. But that actually is really good to remind you to refill your medications. And you may even want to do an auto refill program, which is where they'll go ahead and refill it for you and then just notify you that, you know, that the refill is ready to pick up. But make sure if you're having trouble, talk to your doctor or even your pharmacist about it. We can really give you a lot of good advice.
Doctor, I got to share this with you before we go. Somebody texted in and said, reminds me of the Three Stooges episode where Shemp was given a prescription and the directions were take one pill, skip an hour, then take another pill. Mo gave him the first pill, then forced him to physically skip around for an hour and then take the next one, and Shemp was so exhausted. Sometimes things can be misunderstood.
Yeah, people can be quite literal.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Thank you, Dr. B. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Tommy. You too.
All right. If y'all want to know more about People's Health, it's pretty easy. You can visit the People's Health Medicare Center in Metairie at 3017 Vets. It's between North Causeway Boulevard. We were talking about Trader Joe's earlier. That's where it is. You can't miss it. Appointments are recommended, but walk-ins are also welcome. You can also go to peopleshealth.com or just call them at 1-800-978-9765. peopleshealth.com, 1-800-978-9765, or visit the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets, between North Causeway and Trader Joe's. It's a beautiful facility. We'll take a break. We come back. We're talking about the Downtown Development District and what's going on there. Right now, we pause for WWL First News. For that, we go to our news director, Dave Cohen. 8:47, 13 till 9, quickly to Seth Knudsen, President and CEO of the Downtown Development District. How you doing, Seth?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I'm all right. It's interesting because you pronounce your name Knudsen, and I always wondered if it was Knut Rockne or Newt Rockne.
No, yeah. Well, I think it depends on what part of the country your family is from.
Of the United States or Norway?
Both.
Okay. Tell me what's going on at the DDD and how things are going your first few months on the job and what's happening in downtown New Orleans.
Yeah. So, look, the Downtown Development District is here to provide, you know, three kind of core services. We're here to create a cleaner, safer, and stronger downtown. I think the good news is on all of those fronts, there's really been a lot of progress, and particularly as we approach the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina here, and we're looking back on really the evolution, but maybe a reinvention of downtown that we've kind of been forced into due to many events beyond our control that, you know, started with Katrina, but of course there's been a lot of other challenges, both national and local, from the recession, BP oil spill, and all of the other events that have happened since then. And downtown's really different than it was 20 years ago. And it's not an inherently bad thing. It's just continued evolution. If you think back to when the DDD was founded in 1975, that was, you know, when the Superdome was coming online. And, you know, there's been a lot of change over the last 50 years, certainly in DDD's existence. And the last 20 years really represent a good chunk of that change. You know, some of the things that we see is that, you know, downtown's a much more residential neighborhood than it once was. The residential population downtown has more than doubled in the last 20 years, and the number of residential units has tripled. Hospitality has continued to grow down here. We have 50% more hotels and about 25% more rooms. And, you know, these are trends that really started in earnest in the early years after Katrina. And a lot of the questions that downtowns across the country are facing now in sort of the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic are things that we were forced to kind of confront and look at just 15 years earlier. So in some ways, I would say we've got a head start on the rest of the country, as we often do in confronting 21st century challenges.
I've talked to Sandra Herman a couple of times about Canal Street. How important is Canal Street to downtown?
Well, Canal Street's very important. I mean, I think it's the, you know, historically, obviously, it's got a really important legacy in the history of the city, and its function has changed over time, as downtown has changed over time. But it remains sort of the, you know, the nexus and the connective tissue, I would say, between the French Quarter and downtown. And just going back to the point about the hotel growth here, you know, we're at 22,000 some odd rooms here in downtown. You know, a very strong majority of the people staying in those hotel rooms are going to find their way to Canal Street and across into the French Quarter. And then, of course, we have all of the residents of the city and the region and beyond that also want to come to Canal Street for interesting experiences. It's not the shopping street it once was, and certainly when I was a kid, the memories I have of, you know, going to Krauss and Maison Blanche and other places.
Bro, I'm looking at your picture. You've never been to Krauss's, have you or not?
I have.
Really?
I ate red beans on Monday at the Krauss lunch counter with my family.
I'll be doggone. You must have been young.
I was young. My parents brought me down. They were always, you know, interested in the city, and my mom grew up here. My dad was from the Midwest, which you might have been able to tell from my last name, but I was born and raised here, and I do have some memories. I even have a socket wrench set from McCrory's that I bought.
No kidding.
Some allowance money. Yeah.
I remember back in the day, and I was a very young guy, like a baby, but the Canal Street, and I've had this discussion with Sandra Herman, was a lot like Times Square because they had that big, I think it was a Canadian Club sign or something like that.
Yeah, sure, near the Sanger.
Mm-hmm. So what is your vision, ideally? Because, again, you know, you can't – I don't know how you get people to want – somebody's got to go first, right? And you are head of the New Orleans Redevelopment Authority. Part of that was after Katrina. Somebody's got to go first. And then once people – you get the first one, then it builds. I presume that would be the same when it comes to the redevelopment of Canal Street. You got to get that first one?
I think that's right. I mean, and Sandra and I have had many conversations.
That lady
here
is a force. You know that.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Force for good, yes. And for Canal Street in particular. We've had several conversations in my first few months here, and I think the key is not just identifying where we would like the projects to happen, but identifying sort of the property owners who are interested in really being partners with both the Celebrate Canal effort as well as other public sector partners. Because the real estate market right now, for a lot of these projects, they are very complex, expensive, and the market right now may not support a straight-up market rate transaction. And so there may have to be some public sector subsidy that's involved to get some of these projects off the ground.
You read my mind, Seth, because we only have a couple of minutes left here. And along the lines of, you know, sometimes people balk at public subsidy or tax credits or whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it. But if somebody's got to go first, sometimes you need to do that to get the ball rolling, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're at a point where, you know, Canal has had even a couple of different iterations since the major department stores closed in the 90s. You know, it wasn't that long ago that there were complaints about, you know, luggage and video shops. Those are gone. Now they've been replaced by something else that maybe is not necessarily valued as widely as we would like. But I think it does represent the opportunity for continued evolution and change going forward.
If you had your way, you and Sandra were to have, you know, just be able to wave a magic wand and transform Canal Street, what would it look like?
Well, I think the key here is going forward, what Canal has to offer in terms of its competitive advantage is a unique urban experience. And so it's a safe place where people want to come and spend time, and they can get experiences that they can't get anywhere else. So it's not necessarily a retail destination anymore. You know, I think online shopping has displaced a lot of opportunity for that, not just in downtowns, but sort of across cities. So one thing you can't sort of reproduce online or sort of in your own home is sort of that authentic urban experience. And exactly what form that takes, I think there's a bunch of different ways it could go. But thinking along the lines of, you know, Sazerac House is a relatively new anchor on Canal Street.
Combination museum retail place, right?
Exactly. And it's a unique experience that can't be replicated elsewhere.
I hope you come back, Seth. We don't have a lot of time here. We're almost done. But I hope you come back. I didn't go to Tulane or MIT or Penn, but I do have some ideas on Canal Street, and I think what you guys are doing are great. And I know we got to go, Tim, I know, but it would seem to me, even though people do shop online, there's something to be said about the hotels and the proximity and tourists that just will buy a little bit extra something or the other. Shotsky or whatever they call those things.
Yeah, souvenir,
right. Not that, but like a legitimate piece of wardrobe or something else. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, and to that end, you know, Rubenstein's has had their greatest year ever in 2024, so that's something we can build on.
We got to go because Tim, the board operator, is about to choke me. Thank you, Seth. I hope you come back.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Seth Knudsen, president and CEO of the Downtown Development District, 855, 5 till 9. Relax, Tim. It'll be okay. Traffic now, WWO.
There's a burger, there's a beef stroganoff, there's an Indian-style vegan curry, and there's Filipino dishes. Mm-hmm. We often get asked on the show for
right.
Filipino dishes.
Right.
Here's another one. But the common thread is that they are chefs. One of them is a Filipino family. That's Christy. And they have a curious appetite and have traveled around a lot and have rolled their cravings into a menu that I kind of liken it to Mondo in Lakeview, Tommy. Oh. If people remember Susan Spicer's restaurant Mondo on Harrison Avenue,
right.
It kind of has that same eclectic mix that makes sense, and it's really just good, like chef quality, bistro quality food at in a very cafe casual. Kind of a shack, frankly, kind of setting.
Let me just jump in one second. That is why I love having you on, because I'm looking at the website for Hot and Soul, and technically it's on Bank Street, 2540 Banks, right off of Tulane. But this is a place that nobody would know about other than if you lived in the neighborhood, if you wouldn't expose us to these places, and the menu just looks awesome.
Yeah, and I went the other day, they were polishing up the sign for Trader Joe's to open, and it was a delight, and I can't wait to go back, frankly, and tackle the other half of the menu that I left on the bone.
Bahamian fish chowder?
Sure.
Pork lumpia? What is that?
Lumpia, those are the Filipino-style egg rolls. So, like the egg rolls you get at a Chinese restaurant, but very crunchy, very, very finely minced pork, different flavor profile. Yeah, they're going to have specials like Filipino pork, chicken adobo with pork lumpia
How
egg
is
rolls.
That prepared? Chicken adobo.
No, it's like basically your kind of a it's your chicken soul food dish, but with a harvest of flavors from the Philippines: fish sauce, garlic, soy. You know, it's the way it's marinated and prepared. It gives it a kind of a garlicky, sour, tangy kind of flavor. Just deeply satisfying. That's like the. That's the red beans and rice of Philippines cooking. You know,
right.
It's just a baseline soul food.
Right beneath that, beef stroganoff, which is not a Philippine dish, is it?
No, it's not a dish you see anywhere, which is one of the delights of this menu. I mean, they're making their own egg noodles, and they're making a little beef stroganoff.
That looks delicious. I got to tell you. And also, egg noodles and dill creme fresh?
I'm going to try that one next time. But a standout that I did try this on this visit, people may remember Mimi's and the Marini. This was a late-night bar down on Franklin Avenue in Marini. It's now a bar called Anna's. Great name. But it's Mimi's and the Marini was known for its food, for its late-night menu of tapas. Mm-hmm. And one of their great dishes there was Manchego toast. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out Mike, one of the chefs at Hot and Soul, had a hand in the early days of Mimi's and the Marini. He wasn't the chef, wasn't the founder or anything like that, but he had a hand in it. And this is his take on Manchego toast.
All right, let me read it. It says, mushroom Manchego toast, sourdough sherry cream. Did you try it? And explain what it tastes like, if you can.
Yes, it's fantastic. If you go to NOLA.com, by the way, you can see my story with some pictures of this and all of the other restaurants in Orbit.
I forgot, we're trying to sell newspapers. I forgot.
Hey, just, you know, my bosses are looking out for me.
No, I understand. No, look, I get it. NOLA.com, can go to NOLA.com. You can buy a newspaper, I presume, right?
There's a visual aspect to this audio adventure, my friend.
Definitely, and the pictures are awesome. So do that, definitely. You. Okay.
Manchego toast was one of these lost flavors. I mean, I hadn't had it in the years since Mimi's the Marini closed during the pandemic, and this hit all the buttons and actually is a little bit better than I remember. I think the bread is better. The bread is certainly better, but it's slices of crusty bread toasted and covered in this Manchego cheese sauce with a touch of sherry, mushrooms that give it a little bit more body. And some fresh herbs over the top, and it's delicious.
It looks great. I'm looking at a picture right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Hot and Soul is right there. I mean, that is like the porch overlook to Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. But all around it are interesting places. Like I say, when you put them in a collection, like, wow, what a smorgasbord of eats here.
Well, give me another one.
That's right.
I said, give me another one.
Pardon me, I'd take a sip. Just across the street.
A little early for an old-fashioned, isn't it?
Not in my book, Fred.
There you go.
It's when you stop, not when you start.
Yes.
Right across the street is Dough Winner.
I'm writing that one down. It's not when you stop. It's when you stop. Go ahead. Dough Winners, like the one in Gretna?
Dough Winners Cafe. You and I have talked about Dough Winners because it's a fun name. The Winners part is from the Vietnamese last name Nguyen, which it is, as I've learned about Vietnamese culture, mostly through restaurants in New Orleans, because that's the way it goes in my realm. Nguyen is an extremely common last name in the Vietnamese community, and it's so common that they felt that they could make a pun out of their restaurant name that would translate to people around town, which I think is a statement about the growth of Vietnamese culture and food in New Orleans. Anyway, it's called Dough Winners Cafe. It's related to the bakery of the same name in Gretna, and this is a very entrepreneurial family that also had Huey P's Pizza, Tauntaun Restaurant, all in Gretna.
Oh, really?
Yep, and they rolled it all together into one concept on Tulane Avenue for Dough Winners Cafe, where you can get a bowl of pho, the Vietnamese beef soup. You can get a banh mi, the Vietnamese po' boy. You can get a Vietnamese iced coffee. Or you can get a pepperoni pizza and some mozzarella sticks. So,
varied.
A little of that. But it's a fun concept. It's right on the corner of Tulane, and I think that's Dorjonois, across from the old Dixie Brewery, and now right across the street from Trader Joe's. But real quickly, Tommy, I mean, you put these things together, you go a block up on Broad. Let's face it, you know, people are going to be driving these blocks. If they're going to go to Trader Joe's, they're going to see these spots. They're going to wonder, what the heck's that all about if I haven't been by here in a while? You've got Hibachi Express.
Wait, hang on one second. Let me go back to Dough Winners for a second. That's different than the Gretna restaurant, or similar?
Same folks. Dough Winners in Gretna is a little more straightforward bakery, cafe. They don't have pizza. Let's put it that way.
No, they do have fried chicken, though. You got to wait a while if you want it.
Oh, the fried chicken's excellent. The banh mi's are really good. I love the breakfast banh mi over there. But the Dough Winners in New Orleans on Tulane Avenue adds, you know, mozzarella sticks, pizza, a little piece of Italian.
Let me take a break, Ian. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's hard. Sometimes I just want people to understand what we're talking about. So we've covered Hot and Soul at 2540 Banks. We've covered Dough Winners at 2424 Tulane, all near the new Trader Joe's. We'll talk about some more when we come back. You can always go online and see Ian's story, NOLA.com. As Trader Joe's opens in New Orleans, try these quirky local restaurants near the new grocery, and they have some fantastic pictures, and we'll continue to talk about them when we come back. A rare Thursday appearance. Ian McNulty, nice enough to give us some of his time on Thursday since he can't be here tomorrow. You know who we're talking to tomorrow, Ian, in your spot? Ralph Brennan.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
For me. Yeah, he's one of the leaders of the New Orleans restaurant scene. Some fine places under his belt.
That's why we wanted to have him on at your recommendation. Well, a long time ago, you talked about Ralph Brennan. Anyway, we'll be back in a flash. WWO. Megatons of fun when we talk to Ian McNulty, who covers food, dining, culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, who is with us today. Thankfully, he's normally with us on Friday. Don't skip work tomorrow. It is Thursday today, but Ian made some special exceptions because he's tied up tomorrow with, what was it, a probation hearing, Ian? What was it?
Something like that.
Yeah. So tell me about some more restaurants near Trader Joe's, the new Trader Joe's in Mid-City.
Bobby started with, we talked at length about Hot and Soul and Dough Winner's Cafe. Those are the closest. Like I said, like if you're not beaming down from space, you're approaching there, you're going to drive around. But one of my favorite coffee shops is right around the corner. It's called Coffee Science. Mm-hmm. And if people remember the old Caldi's, the late great Caldi's coffee on Decatur Street in the French Quarter, a piece of a vanished French Quarter culture, there's a connection that runs through Coffee Science, the same roaster, same coffee guru back in the day as Coffee Science's modern place. And it's a terrific coffee shop, and it has a killer breakfast burrito that is like practically grab-and-go speed, which I will die on this mountaintop. The New Orleans needs more good grab-and-go kinds of things.
You mention? What kind of food?
Breakfast burrito.
Okay, breakfast burrito.
Yeah. Sometimes it's all you need. It's all you want is in your car, a coffee and a breakfast burrito, and you get your bag of groceries from the store, and you're on your way. Mm-hmm. But right next door to that is Hibachi Grill.
Oh, we don't eat in a new car. No, sir.
Yeah, okay. Hibachi Grill is it's known for its pop-up identity, which is Nori Guys. These guys are at farmers markets, events, and such, and they do this really fun dish, which is a sushi taco, which is the taco is not a tortilla. It's a fried sheet of nori, the seaweed, the black seaweed from sushi bars, fried up so it's nice and crispy, a little tempura shell, and they put spicy raw tuna, or cooked shrimp with crab meat, and they make these little tacos, and then they do like a hibachi grill kind of thing, not at a hibachi table like a Japanese restaurant, but back in the kitchen, so you get these takeout plates of like hibachi grill style lamb chops or chicken or what have you.
I was going to ask you about that specific dish because I'm looking at the picture and it's in a styrofoam carton. Is it only takeout or can you eat there?
No, you can eat there too. You can eat there too, but it's just not that hibachi restaurant, full show kind of thing.
Well, I don't care about that. These teriyaki lamb chops with the broccoli and the rice, that looks delicious.
Yeah, it's the express version of those teriyaki meals you've had. Put it that way. And right across the street from that, low on curve appeal, but that means something different in New Orleans, right? It's this corner store that is going to have good food, right? You just pull up and it says Yakiman, gumbo, plate lunches, po' boys, and you just know it's going to be good food, and it is. This is Banks and Broad seafood, a little rough around the edges, they're taking orders from behind the plastic at the register there, but I'm telling you, the gumbo.
I don't mind that. Sometimes that can be intriguing. Right.
It's sometimes a mark of a good place. It's the gumbo in a styrofoam cup. Again, it's going to fit in your cup holder in your car. Is killer. It's just a great gumbo, and it's a good bargain price. Across the street from that, Brunch Central, Ruby Slipper. This was an old union hall that sat empty for years until Ruby Slipper came in, invested a ton of money, put it back on the map, got cool murals all over the front. You pull around the back off of Bank Street, and it's like this big outdoor patio with yard games. It's like pet friendly outside. It's a really nice, big, colorful brunch spot for your boozy brunch on your shopping trip to Trader Joe's. It's New Orleans. I love my people. Take it a little further out on Tulane Avenue. One of the best Honduran restaurants in town is Tia Maria's Kitchen. And Tia Maria, Aunt Maria herself, might be in there in a nice straw hat and a flower shirt cooking for you. This is a great place for pupusas, for the Honduran style chicken, which is fried over cabbage with that garlicky white sauce. This is all in this little universe, this little orbit around the Trader Joe's, and it was to pull it all in a ball and explore it was super interesting.
See, I think this whole article and this whole conversation is fascinating because there is such a concentration of restaurants, and these are places that you would not normally try or hear of, right? I mean, and this Honduran food. Tell me about. I don't think had a Honduran food. What is that like? What can I expect?
Honduran food is terrific, and New Orleans is rich with it. We've got a long history, New Orleans and Honduras, going back to the old United Fruit Company days. Mm-hmm. Seriously, I mean, it's like this connection that was built on that trade. And then after Hurricane Katrina, the Latin American population in New Orleans in general just exploded, and in particular Hondurans, family roots here and connections. So there's a lot more places to eat Honduran food now, and it's a special cuisine. It's it's Central America. It's very close to Mexico, but it's very distinctly different. The enchiladas there are going to be like flat discs piled up with maybe your ground beef or your chicken, covered with your salsa and your sauces. The pupusas are a big deal. These are cornmeal cakes that are stuffed with cheese, maybe a little bit of cracklin, and this slaw on top of it. They call it cortito. It's this pickled cabbage, carrot kind of mix that goes on top. Not necessarily spicy. It's not a spicy hot food, but it's a very flavorful food.
Real quick, what is she stirring in that pot? It looks like red beans, but it's not. What is that? Some kind of refried beans?
It's probably their black beans. It's probably
black beans,
their
And then another picture you have is pollo con tajadas.
Yes,
pardon my pronunciation. That looks awesome.
Yes, that is terrific. Tajadas are the fried plantain strips, and this crunchy cabbage that gets mixed up in there, and again the white sauce. It goes by different names, but it's like just the Honduran yum sauce. It's just this tasty, creamy, garlicky sauce that goes on things.
That's at 2931 Tulane. Ian, we're out of time, but I tell you, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on Thursday and for opening my eyes about all these fantastic restaurants. And you know what my thought would be to leave people with? Why in the world, with all of this available to you, would you go to, no disrespect to anybody, but one of these national chain restaurants? Why would you do that?
Eat local, man. Those big companies, they have marketing budgets. They have economies of scale. They're going to give you what looks like a bargain, what looks like a deal. I think when you deal with your neighbors, with the locals, you get a lot more value out of it and a lot more pleasure of the meal.
Just different, something different to eat. The squid ink noodles, I don't know about that. That looks a little bit too much like worms to me. But hey, to each his own, right?
Save them for me, Tommy. I'll eat all the squid ink noodles you leave on your plate. That's enough. That was a special at Hot and Soul, and I was glad to have it.
Do you eat them blindfolded?
Heck no. No, it's all part of the pleasure, man. The silky black noodles. I don't know. I think they look sexy as hell.
Okay. To each his own. That's what makes it America. Hey, Ian, God bless you. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I really do for this tour of Mid-City near the new Trader Joe's. Let me recap real quick here. And y'all can go to NOLA.com. As Trader Joe's opens in New Orleans, try these quirky local restaurants near the groceries. Hot and Soul on Bank Street. Dough Winners on Tulane. We got Coffee Science, right, is the name of it?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, we got Hibachi Grill, Broad and Bank Seafood. We got the Ruby Slipper and Tia Maria's Kitchen and more if you go and look at that article. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, Tommy. See you next Friday.
You got it.
Happy Friday, Junior, to everybody on this Thursday.
Yes, sir. And again, you got so much money to spend. If you're going to eat out, eat local and enjoy something different rather than the big chain just warm where they don't even cook the stuff. 9:39 now, 21 till 10. We come back. We're going to talk about assessments on the North Shore with St. Tammany Assessor Louis Fitzmorris. Right now, it's time for traffic on WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10. One of the local TV stations doing something about the North Shore Humane Society. And the dog that they have on right now has to be Grady's first cousin because they look identical. We're talking to Louis Fitzmorris, St. Tammany Parish Assessor, now to talk about the homestead exemption. I heard, and also about open roll time to check your assessment. Morning, Louis. How are you?
Doing well, Tommy. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. You know, I heard your interview with Newell, and that really got me to thinking because I don't know what the answer is here because the assessments, the exemptions have not been changed. So while the prices of houses have gone up, but if you're going to raise the exemption, that means people are going to have to pay or pay less taxes, which means less money going into the government. That's got to be made up somehow, right? Am I oversimplifying?
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And it's like the point I was making with Newell. There's 64 parishes, and we're not all the same. Yeah. And so every parish is going to be in their own unique situation in regards.
Wait, Saint but about Tammany exemption? Parish, is the exemption standard from state?
The homestead. Yeah, the homestead is $75,000 for everybody across the state. This last session, there was a bill that would have raised it to $125,000. But it would have been a local option. It would have been up to each parish.
So let me jump in real quick. Does that mean, is it as simple as if my house is appraised at $300,000, it's actually $225,000 because the first $75,000 doesn't count? Is it that easy?
That's correct. Okay, that is correct. That is correct.
Go ahead, please.
And think about when this was put in place. I mean, it was first introduced, believe it or not, back in 1934. For 20,000. And then, I want to say in the 74 Constitution, it was raised to 30 or 40,000. Then in, 79, 80 is when it was increased to 75,000. So if you look at it during that time frame and stuff, that most homes were fully homestead exempted. And even here in St. Tammany, 20 years ago, almost half were fully homestead exempted. Now I'm around 5% of my homes, and most of those individuals have the senior freeze, had it for a while, or living in house trailers out in the country. Now our situation, and I think it's more in line with what's going on Orleans and East Jefferson. It's the residential. It's just this increase in residential. Some of it's just supply and demand issue, a lot of investment, so I gave. Know the example of the first house my wife and I, Kanye, bought in 92-93. We got it for $48,500. Mm-hmm. It sold, we didn't own it, I wish I did, but it sold in 2022 for $200,000. So in 30 years, it quadrupled in value. And
but
that's
yet,
what we're dealing
the
with. But not every parish has had that.
The exemption
stayed
the same.
You're right,
right?
Tommy. And, I'm sorry?
The exemption stayed the same, right?
That's correct.
Okay, good.
That's correct. The exemption has not changed. That's my point. Mm-hmm. It has not. If you adjusted it for inflation from 1979 when it was increased to 7, it would be around $300,000 right now, which, by coincidence, is what the cost of your average three-bedroom home is now in St. Tammany Parish. But that's not realistic. I don't. But 20 years ago, if you asked me about raising the homestead, I would have said we don't need to. But it's different now because it's just, even with the rollback in the mills every 4 years, if you have an increase in values and stuff, it doesn't make up for, like I told Neil, inflation is a tax increase without a vote of the people. Mm-hmm. And that's what the homestead does. It helps adjust for that inflation.
So let me jump in for a second if I can. First house I bought in Belchase.
It's your show.
No, you're my guest. The first house I bought in Belchase was like $57,000. And when I built a house in Belchase, in Algiers rather, when I built a house in Belchase, I got a property tax bill and it was like, what? What's this? Is there any way, Lewis, to do this, change the Constitution so that the exemption would be based somehow on a parish-by-parish level? Because obviously real estate is more...
That's what I would hope. Okay. That's what I would hope. Right. I think that's the only way to get it passed, to be honest with you. Because I was talking to an assessor in one of the small rural parishes. Mm-hmm. And stuff. They're losing population. Mm-hmm. They're losing people. We're gaining people here. Our situation is really unique, and we are so... There is no other parish that I'm aware of that has the lowest amount of fully homestead exempted homes. Mm-hmm. It's just something that I believe very strongly needs to be looked at. In regards to losing money, there would be money right now. We estimated if it went to 125, the homestead exemption, there would be around a $39 million or so hit on the revenue. But at the same time, I believe if we do this right and do it and do it and phase it in over time and maybe wait to the next reassessment, the growth that we've been experiencing, which is at least around 3% a year, will make up that difference.
But to be fair, real quick, and Lewis, I hope you come back because I don't have anywhere near enough time to get into this. We'll have you back. I guarantee you next week. But when you talk about the shortfall, inflation has also hit governments, right? So
absolutely. I mean, the increased cost for that's a great point too, Tommy. It's affected everybody. Whether you're just a regular homeowner or you're in the government, everything costs more now, considerably more. So and that's all part of it. But yeah, we do. But real quick,
our open roll
officially starts tomorrow. It goes through the end of to the 29th. This is a designated time period by law. We ask you to check your assessment, make sure we got the right address, make sure all exemptions like homesteads or senior freeze, if you're eligible, to please check all that. And if you need to file review, the best place to do it is online.
This is
at our website.
And what's the website?
STPAO.org.
All right. I want you to come back because we didn't have enough time. And a lot of our audience is a lot of St. Tammany Parish listens to WWL. And I think it's very important stuff.
Yes, they do.
So you'll come back, Lewis?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
Tommy.
Have a great weekend. All right.
You too, buddy.
All right. Don't hang out with that Newell Norman anymore. I'm just kidding. Lewis Fitzmaurice, St. Tammany Parish assessor. We'll take a break. Newell is next. We'll find out what he's got when we come back on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.